This episode of The Payload is brought to you in partnership with Legion by Lenovo and Intel. Find out more about Legion by Lenovo on Facebook and Twitter at Legion by Lenovo.
The podcast for heroes in the world of Overwatch. This is The Payload.
Everybody, welcome to episode number 56 of The Payload. We're an Overwatch podcast from BlizzPro.com. From Denver, Colorado, I'm John Horstman. With me, of course, is not the normal crew this week. Jimmy and Raj couldn't make it this week, but we searched the internet, scoured far and wide, and found the Overwatch esports expert. Brought him here on the show this week. Returning for his third time on the show, it's none other than good friend Jamerson. Hey, Jamerson, welcome back, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, John. Unfortunately, yeah, Jimmy's not going to be here, but hey, you know, you got budget Jimmy here in Jamerson. So let's do this. I'm super excited for today's show.
Budget Jimmy. You're so modest. I love it. We've got a heck of a show. We are recording on a Friday. I don't want to say it, but I'm going to say it. Yesterday was my birthday, so decided to take the day off. We had a giant nerdy birthday day planned. I went to at the Denver Art Museum. This was really cool. They had the all the costuming of Star Wars over all seven films there. So like original costumes, original like concepts and frames and all that stuff.
Might be having a little bit of an issue here.
Yeah. Are you, your audio going weird?
I heard you up to Denver Art Museum.
Denver Art. Am I back?
Yes, you are back now.
I am back. Okay. Sorry about that. That was weird. I'm not even going to edit that out because this is a live show and that's what we do. But yeah, Denver Art Museum, they had all the costuming for Star Wars. And so all like seven films, I tweeted a bunch of it. So if you wanted to see it there, but it was so cool. I'm such a Star Wars freak.
I saw it. It looked amazing. It looked absolutely amazing, and I was jealous.
It was really freaking sweet. And then people who say that DC can't make movies should go see the Lego Batman movie because it was the best DC movie that they've been able to make so far. So,
well, like Lego just makes everything better, especially.
Right, it's DC, Lego, right? It's like, Will Arnett.
If you want a DC game, make sure it's Lego. If you want a DC movie, make sure it's Lego. They just do everything.
That's the only way they've been able to make it stick. You need Lego or Christopher Nolan to make it work. So, well, let's do what we always do. Talk about our weeks in Overwatch. Jamerson, what have you been up to recently in and around the game?
Since the last time I was on the show, finished out doing Winter Premiere. I think we'll briefly touch on that later on when we bring up the Immortals. Got done doing that, the in-game directing. And then just this week, Esports Arena, the company that I work for, we put on our first, and I believe the first broadcasted 3v3 format tournament, which I would say was a rounding success. We had 55 teams competing, teams like the newly formed Bench Boys. We had half of Complexity.
What? That's so cool.
I'm missing so many teams here. Why can't I remember?
Well, there's 55 of them.
We had FaZe Clan split up in there. I mean, it was just lots of big names. We had really great reviews. Like, people were saying that they really did enjoy the 3v3 format over the 6v6 format just because it was a bit more casual. And then, of course, you're not, like on the edge of your seat trying to play at like the maximum tier of your abilities for 20 minute stretches at a time instead of like these small little rounds. So that's what I've been up to.
That's awesome. So I have a question because I haven't gotten to catch up on all of that yet. So was there like a prevalent meta in these games? Were there like consistently great compositions that people would choose, or was it pretty all over the place?
So it's still a format that's evolving, especially for teams. A lot of teams were saying that they were actually taking this seriously, and you can tell because they did have like preset teams, hero teams built up, mm-hmm. right? The format, the way it works, generally, no repeat heroes. You use a hero, it's done until you exhaust the hero pool, and then you open it up again. So generally with five rounds in, there aren't enough heroes there to like completely exhaust it unless you tie about two or three times. So we saw certain strats like people try to stall out, get the draw, and then try to reset basically the hero pool with setups like Bastion Symmetra and Mei, and just try to like campsite spawn and wait out the timer and then get the pool reset so they can bring out their best heroes again. Other strats that we saw, of course, there was the pharmacy, very prevalent, usually used in conjunction with like a soldier 76. So the pharmacy take to the sky, 76 sustains himself on the ground. And then we also saw the use of Lucio. Now, in this format, really, you see how Lucio is stunted in his healing ability. He's great when he needs to heal up five other members, but when it's only other two other members, his healing is not the greatest. So you really do have to like weigh the benefits of trying to amp up his healing or amp up his speed. And we saw a lot of teams try to use the speed boost to try to get an early initiation against other teams. So they would run compositions like Lucio, Zarya, and Reaper, right? Get the Reaper in there with the Zarya bubble, make sure he doesn't get CC'd and he just does massive damage. And then, of course, it's just bring in Roadhog whenever you can. Because Roadhog is just, he's a beast.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, that's really interesting. I didn't know if it would just be kind of a free-for-all, you know, a couple of obvious combinations like Fermercy, like you said. But that's really neat. I can't wait to catch up on that. That's what my Saturday is going to be dedicated to, is catching up on this. So I'm really excited to do that. And congrats on the new casting gig. That's going to be awesome, too. So. Cool. Well, I would say then, since we've exhausted that, oh yeah, for me in Overwatch, I've been playing a lot on PC again. I know, right? Like everybody listening to the show is like, finally, he gets it. It's been so much fun. I've been playing a lot of Zarya. I think I want Zarya to like be my main for a while until a later date. It's like she's coordinated enough where like you need to kind of be know what you're doing. You know, it's not like a latch on type of ammunition like Winston or Mercy, because I'm not great at PC shooters yet. But at the same time, it's not like super hit scan, like headshots or die type person like a McCree or something like that. So I'm really excited. I've been spending a lot of time there, grinding my way up, and hopefully here I can hit my goal is to hit like high platinum, low diamond by the end of the season. So
I believe close. In you, and especially if you stick with Zarya, she's one of those heroes within this current season, since she was released, who are just really high impact, right? She's got a great utility kit. She can keep herself safe. She can keep her teammates safe. And then, of course, she has that huge impact ultimate that can just outright win a team fight without any other ulties, right? Just go ahead and throw it in. If you catch three or four people with a biotic nade, all of a sudden they're dead. So if you can like learn how to track with her and keep your energy high, like make sure your energy management's great, she's one of those heroes that will, get you up to plat, get you up to diamond, possibly even masters if you can really figure her out.
Sure. Yeah, I'm still really clumsy with a mouse and keyboard. I'm still, you know, I'm used to WoW and Hearthstone, which are not the most, they're not the most intensive, or a controller, which obviously is silliness. So we'll have to see. We'll be giving you updates here throughout, but I felt pretty good. We won a lot of our games, like my placement matches. We won 9 of those games. I got cards multiple times. So yeah, should be good. Should be fun, but let's move on to the news here.
This week in Overwatch.
so much news. Jamerson was mouthing it, and you are not wrong. Before we do jump into the news, we do want to thank our MVPs, Adam B, J.A., Coral, and Corel. Sorry, every time. I have it spelled phonetically down below. Corel and Tommy H, thank you so much for your support of the show. We couldn't be doing it without you. Head on over to patreon.com/payloadpodcast if you want to support the show and help us be able to do really cool stuff. Okay, so this isn't the biggest news first, but it's big news. It's and it's something that we wanted to talk about right away. And actually, I didn't even put this in the notes, but we had the Blizzard earnings call this last week. Overwatch is the fastest Blizzard franchise to 25 million. I don't think there's any surprises there. But I believe it was Mike Morhaime who said that they will be announcing team owners soon for Overwatch League. Did you get a chance to see what he said, Jamerson?
I didn't get to read up on the full notes. I saw the tweet. I saw a tweet about it, possibly like 30 minutes.
Yeah,
it was like 30 minutes before I went live yesterday. So I was just like, well, I guess I'll have to read about it when I wake up tomorrow morning. But yeah, it's pretty exciting that now we're finally getting news, because people were really about to like go up in arms within the esports community about it. You know, the announcement was made back in early November. It's been roughly 3 months now. And so
yeah, we haven't heard really anything.
Super excited.
Yeah, it's about time. And I think a lot of this, I think it was last week on Reddit, somebody posted this long, scathing post about how Blizzard isn't taking Overwatch esports seriously. And honestly, I'm not even going to try to like be diplomatic about it. I thought most of it was crap because we're not even at a year old game yet, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that aspect, but a lot of it too was, I think, well-founded. Like, teams like Reunited are going under because there's so much up in the air with Overwatch League and how is that being supported. Teams aren't able to sign players to long-term contracts because they're not necessarily sure what Overwatch is going to look like in a couple months. And while we got like that rough timeline on Overwatch League of what happens next, I think next thing is we get team owner announcements. And after that, I think is the combine. And, you know, we have that, but people were just kind of like, hey, what's going on? Are we waiting into the second half of 2017 before we get the ball rolling here? Because the video is very obviously kind of alluding to like early to mid 2017 for when the ball felt like it would be rolling. So I'm kind of interested. Do you think that we're going to be hearing, like, how soon do you think that we're going to be hearing about something next, Jamerson?
I'm going to say sooner rather than later.
very diplomatic of you.
There's things I know that I can't like really talk
sure,
about.
I get it. Yep. Fair enough.
But if you're looking at how Blizzard has been reacting in terms of tournament licenses, right? They haven't been giving out as many, and that's because they have a certain schedule they want to, stay on top of. So they've got to make sure, like, man, this is really difficult to do.
Sorry, we didn't discuss this beforehand, so basically, I didn't know that there was anything to not talk about.
I think we're in good shape. It just took them a really long time to announce it. The schedule looks like basically what everyone expected after that announcement. I think we're going to be in good shape. I don't have full confirmation. This is all speculation on information that I have, but I think we're in good shape. Unfortunately, yeah, like you had said, there were teams like Reunited that had to go under, but we are seeing like an influx of attention coming in from non-endemic brands and sponsors and, you know, like sports organizations, which can make it a bit easier for the teams at this point to try and maintain what they're doing. Speaking of which, it's like Splice, right? They just had a new influx of like investors, which is why they're able to field the new Overwatch roster. And so I think the players, while it looked a little dicey, you know, for the last few months, they shouldn't be as worried as they are.
Blizzard is notorious for sticking to timelines, but communicating them not as early as they possibly could or the community is necessarily wanting. And part of it's just because people are so loyal to Blizzard. As soon as Blizzard knows it, we as fans want to know it, which isn't, you know, necessarily feasible. But there's also the set of it too, where it kind of reminds me a lot of like Apple. Apple announces an iPhone on Friday and you can get it next Friday kind of thing. And we're okay with that because we all love our iPhones. So it's kind of like that same thing. So no doubt, I never was really worried about it. I was more just like, I just want to geek out on this. I've been wearing this shirt for the same for every day since BlizzCon, basically, at some point. Katie knows I had to buy a second one because I wore my first one so much. It's my favorite shirt. So I'm just ready for Overwatch League. Always get two.
Always get two.
That's why you're the pro and I'm the casual. So that was part of the news, but we did get a new PTR patch and a pretty big one for you stationary shooters there who don't want to move a whole lot. I'm just kidding. It's a joke. But we saw pretty big changes to Bastion, D.Va, Mei, Mercy. And we're just going to go through down the list and talk about them a little bit. The big one, though, was Bastion.
Yep.
Pretty big. So Jeff Goodman alluded to this last week on the Overwatch forums that they were testing some pretty big changes to Bastion, but we didn't get really anything more than that. And then now that he is live, here's what we're seeing. So Bastion, for those of you who aren't super familiar with him, has Sentry Mode, Recon Mode, and Tank Mode. Just remember those. Sentry Mode is when he's basically when you always are getting crushed by Bastion. Recon Mode's when you're running around. Tank Mode's when you're ultimate. So now that we got that out of the way, so they buffed the deploy time from 1.5 seconds to 1 second. They increased the spread in Sentry Mode by 50%. They increased the magazine size from 200 to 300, and they removed all headshots and critical damages. And a big part of that, Jeff Goodman kind of talked a little bit about it, is that they want him to feel like a tank and shield buster and not necessarily a melter if you can, you know, get some lucky crits or get some lucky headshots in there instead of just really getting those barriers down. So how do you feel about the new Sentry Mode, Jaberson? Have you got to hop on the PTR and see it, or are you just kind of keeping track from like forum stuff like that? And what do you think of these changes overall?
I haven't been able to actually touch the PTR. I mean, even before then, I barely played Bastion. I probably have less than 30 minutes on Bastion over the course of like the last three seasons. But people are, you know,
I wonder why.
I do see like on Reddit and everywhere else that people are like trying to make the comparisons, right? Is he the new 76? I've even seen like the side-by-side comparison, right? Sentry Mode, Recon Mode, and then 76 doing like full spray, not bursting or anything. And his damage looks pretty darn reliable, especially at range. I don't know if he's going to be the Soldier 76 killer, but he definitely does seem to have more of a place now within compositions. Especially, I think one of the biggest changes is going to be his deploy time. It makes him a lot more mobile.
Right.
And a lot of people actually even treated it kind of like a reload also, because the times between the reload and the deploy are actually about the same. So now with the buff to the deploy time, it's even stronger. So, you know, if you run out of bullets, you don't have to reload. Just go into your sentry mode, and then there you go. You've got a full 300 ammo clip. Once that's out, just go ahead and go back into recon mode, and basically that's your reload at that point. So there's definitely places for him. I don't think 76 is going to get replaced by him, because there are certain compositions that you can only run with the 76, and the Bastion will not be able to help in that regard.
Right. I think... And it's weird, because as soon as I saw, and I know you saw too, because you're just talking about it, the video, in the training ground with the 76 and the Bastion, and they were from pretty far away. And he was in Bastion was in recon mode, and then 76 was just in full on, you know, left a button down, kind of just shooting. And Bastion was doing more damage in recon mode faster than Soldier 76 was, and was able to melt the dummy faster. And people immediately were like scared and frightened and like, what's going to happen? Because that's just in recon mode. Don't forget that Bastion has a sentry mode, which is pretty powerful, especially once you get up against those shields and barriers. So if Bastion does out damage Soldier at a better range and ends up replacing him in recon mode, just for that, I bet we see changes. Like, we might see it on the PTR, but I just don't see them keeping that for the most part. So I guess we'll have to see. And you just kind of touched on it when we were talking about the recon mode being so good. His spread was decreased by 25%, and he has an extra 5 bullets in his magazine. So from 20 to 25. This, though, is probably one of the bigger changes. His self-repair, he can now use while it's moving. It's no longer interrupted by damage, but it's a resource like D.Va's defense matrix. So, Jamerson, to your point, it's going to make him more mobile. It's going to make him more kind of viable when he needs to heal. He can do that on the run while you're changing points or changing positions. But it also doesn't mean that he can heal forever. So, you know, there is a trade-off with that. But overall, because they remove the movement and damage restriction, from what I've seen, people are regarding this as just a straight-across buff. Would you you agree with that? Yeah.
No, most definitely. You know, as soon as I would see, like, a Bastion try to hide into a corner, if I had some sort of AoE, I knew he was going to try and heal himself. So I'd just throw the AoE in that general direction, interrupt his heal, and then continue the chase, you know? So now that he can actually repair himself on the move, I like it a lot. It was probably one of his, like, larger weaknesses in that regard. I love the resource meter. I think we need more of that in Overwatch. Currently, it's just down to D.Va and, I guess, Bastion on PTR. I would love to see more resource meter in this game at this point.
Yeah, totally. Last big thing here, and then we'll keep moving on. Tank mode. So we did get a change to his ultimate. He no longer receives bonus armor. So you notice when he goes into sentry mode or tank mode, there's a bunch of yellow on that bar. That's armor. And he gets more of it for being in those modes. He doesn't get that anymore. Instead, when he's in sentry mode and recon. No, I don't think that's right. I think it's sentry mode and tank mode, right? I have to double check this. You know me, when you're doing show notes and you're like 90% sure that you're doing the right thing. Well, in sentry and tank mode, so that was right. It is in sentry and tank, not my recon and tank. So yeah, so when he's in tank mode, when he's down, he's not running around. He takes 35% less damage instead of just getting additional armor. And this was kind of funny. On the PTR, when his damage reduction was activated and you had like an Ana on there and you like Ana grenade him and all that stuff, his damage reduction was like 93.5%. Yeah. And that is ridiculous. So it was an oversight. They fixed it. So they capped his damage reduction at 70%.
I think some of the tests that were being done, people were doing like damage boosted Widowmaker going for like a crit shot, only did 13 damage or something ridiculous, something ludicrous like that.
Yeah. Just a stupid, awful amount. So overall, Bastion changes. How do you feel about these ones, Jamerson? Do you think that next Apex week we're gonna see Taimu on the Bastion, or is it just more like, hey, Now he's more viable, and you'll see him beyond just those bronze, silver, and gold games, or in super specific situations.
Personally, I'm terrified for my own games first, because it's going to be a long time before people actually learn how to play against Bastion, because he's going to be brought into situations where you're not expecting him, right? Generally, either you see him on like defense, they're trying to go for a hold, or they post him up onto like the payload with a Reinhardt shield just to keep him alive. But now he can play a lot more dynamically. And so we're going to see pro teams bring out some really broken stuff. I mean, we've seen them experiment with Bastion before. Teams like Cloud9 and Envious have pulled out the Bastion legitimately in their play.
Yeah.
But now, once they actually get to experiment with it and it becomes a actual viable thing, I'm terrified to know what kinds of things people figure out. Because people are going to figure out how to break him first, and then they'll learn how to counter him. But the counter is going to come like a month later.
That's exactly, that's exactly what happened when Bastion, remember when Bastion had the front shield? Right? It sees you shaking your head. So that's a yes.
We need like five Pharahs. Everyone just spam at him.
Right.
It's not happening.
Yeah. No hero limit. You're playing two Bastions, two Torbjorns, and like a Lucio and a Mercy. And you're just like, well, there goes the game. It took a long time for people to realize, oh, Genji, oh, Tracer, even Reaper, and these other busters who just really bust Bastion up. Difficult. So you're totally right. It's probably going to take a little time. If you're ranked a little bit lower, that's totally okay. But you might be more frustrated by this. And you can either choose to be the Bastion or be the team that loses to the Bastion, probably for the first week or so after it comes out. So be the Bastion, guy.
Be the Bastion you want to see in the world.
Be the Bastion. I love it. So that's the big change. D.Va did finally get the change to her defense matrix to where there is no minimum amount of space of, oh my God, space is fine. There's no minimum amount of space between an opponent's muzzle at the end of their gun and an opponent before the matrix picks that up. So
yeah.
One of the biggest interactions of that is it used to be like Roadhog would hook whatever your Lucio, and even with the defense matrix protecting your Lucio, he would still die because his gun was right next to Lucio, and you just couldn't protect him in that way. They removed that, which is kind of a bigger deal for people who play a lot of D.Va or probably at higher levels as well. Overall, I mean, it's definitely a good thing for D.Va. Do you think this will end up having a big impact overall, though?
After the nerfs that she received about 3 weeks ago, I think she did need a little bit more fine tuning there. And I do like that, you know, they tried to go a little bit different route there and made sure her defense matrix was a bit more reliable. And like you said, it indirectly nerfs a lot of heroes like Roadhog, even Zarya. We saw that Zarya's typically they could just run into the D.Va, make sure they're close enough, look at the ground, shoot off the Graviton Surge, and it would reliably get off. But now Zarya's might not have that option if they're facing off against D.Va's. So I really do like that now. We're seeing kind of like the tanks really starting to counter each other, and we're seeing more of like these situational picks really come out. If you know the enemy team has just a boss Zarya, go ahead and bring out the D.Va. If there's like a really good, Roadhog on the other end, instead of trying to rely upon just the Zarya barrier and trying to keep him alive, or possibly even a Maywall to like try and stop the hook, now you've also got the D.Va. So I do like that a lot of these counterplay alternatives are now here.
Awesome. Yeah, so I think that's great. Something also that we saw wasn't in the initial patch, but just got patched yesterday, 24 hours from this exact time, actually. Roadhog saw his spread decrease by 20% for a scrap gun, and his chain hook, targets are now pulled 3.5 meters away up from 2 meters, so farther away, and the cooldown on his hook is reduced from 6 to 8. Well, increased, so it's longer between hooks. This is a pretty big change for Roadhog. It probably won't affect the role that he plays, but it definitely, in my opinion, sounds like it will make him a tad more situational when you are only able to put that hook out so often. But he's still going to be putting out a lot of damage because that buff to his scrap gun probably makes up for a good amount of the change to his chain hook. What do you think?
A lot of the pros currently think that that was unnecessary. That second aspect of his changes was completely unnecessary because he still puts out plenty of damage, you know, at range and even up close. You can still one-shot a target if you get the proper spread. So making him that more, I guess, precise, you know, it's really dangerous, especially if you're very practiced with his right click. I know people who could just one-shot me as a 76 Reaper, even a Tracer from range. I'll turn a corner and all of a sudden I've got scrap in my face and I'm just dead. So I don't think that was necessary. The hook changes I like a lot. I don't think 6 to 8 is actually enough. I think they could increase that cooldown a little bit more, or maybe add like a little bit more counterplay to his chain, possibly putting like a half a second a half second delay before, you know, the interaction. You get chained and then you get pulled in. If there's like a half second there where your team has the opportunity to possibly try and break the chain, I would like that kind of counterplay for the hook. I mean, I still think Roadhog, though, like, because any game that has a hook, it's going to be broken in some way, in some regard. That hook definitely needs to see a bit more attention at this point.
Interesting. Okay, I like it. And you're right. And there still exists nothing quite like the chain hook, right? There's very few, if any, ways to take an opponent from over there and bring them here. The opposite of a speed boost, basically, of getting yourself over there. Closest thing is like what Zarya's alt kind of does that. Pharah's alternate fire kind of will move people for you. Mm-hmm. And so you hit on a really great point where either the chain hook will probably always be good/broken. I think the flip side of that is if it's not good/broken, then it's probably irrelevant and not even worth it at all at that point because they've nerfed it into the ground too far. So that's interesting. We'll have to see what happens on the PTR with Roadhog. But again, it's just, doesn't matter kind of the changes you make because he's still going to be so, that hook is still going to be really valuable. And now he's just putting out more damage. So, well, you've got that going for you as well. We also saw a change to Mei. She can be targeted by allies when in cryo freeze, a smaller one, but will help for teams overall. We did see some Mercy changes, and we're going to spend some more time on them because Rosh is a main Mercy player. She's a Masters Mercy player, borderline Grandmaster Mercy player, and she's so good at it. So we wanted to spend some time on it. The big thing is Mercy is now invulnerable when she's using her ultimate, and when she resurrects other people, those allies are also invulnerable for a brief amount of time. Jamerson, what does this mean for Mercy? Was that all she was missing? Is her damage boost was great, her healing was great, but because her ultimate was a suicide mission every time, it just felt like not worth it? Or does she still need more attention?
I haven't actually gotten to see the new Mercy change in the PTR yet, but
just speculate. Give me your Grandmaster speculation.
Mercy's going to play the same before team fight, right? If she has her res, you're fighting 6v5. She's hiding and she's going to be coming in for that six or five man res. Now, you would generally see it end up being a 5v6 afterwards because she immediately gets focused down. There are some occasions where she somehow survives if the enemy team doesn't properly, focus her. But generally, she's not as useful, honestly, after that fight, right? It's all about team awareness and making sure as the opposing team that you're not just dumping on all of your ulties in this 5v6 fight. I think as long as teams are have the proper discipline, her res is still basically useless. I think she needs a little change to her Caduceus staff, making her binary, right? Either she's healing you or she's damage boosting you. It's not quite enough for her at this point. I think if they maybe did a little rework on her Caduceus staff to like possibly, I don't know, like 100% healing, but while you're healing, you also give your healing target like a 10% damage boost, and then swap it the other way. If you swap the other way where you're relying more upon the damage boost, where it's 100% damage boost with about 10% healing, it could feel a little bit better for her. Small things like maybe giving her the invuln during her guardian angel, where she becomes very vulnerable, and then increasing the cooldown on that so that she can't abuse it and just be invuln all the time, is another way that she can be a little bit more viable. I mean, the other thing is that like Mercy is kind of being nerfed in like or buffed in like a vacuum, right? Mercy works really well when there's a Pharah. Unfortunately, if there is not a Pharah, most teams aren't going to be running her. So you might have to also bring Pharah more in line, more viable before we see more.
Yeah,
Mercies.
It's a great thought. I didn't even think about that one, so I'm glad you brought that up. Last couple of things here before we jump onto the actual big news. Sombra, Widowmaker, Zarya, Zenyatta, and Mercy all have additional sensitivity options for some of their abilities. So especially for people who main certain heroes, more options to fine tune their gameplay to use only a good thing. Eichenwald, the second gate now that you have. So when you go up to the, not the one right after you capture, but the second one when you're going into the castle.
Oh yeah.
It does not close completely after you break through. Instead, there's rubble there, so it's partially broken. Should be nice to have. It's something where you only have those two ways in, two small doorways in on offense. It's a pain in the butt. And now you've got a third option. Well, I guess three ways, like what we saw at the Overwatch World Cup with that awesome Zarya jump right through the freaking window. So amazing. So three, now you have four ways to get in there reliably. So that's only a good thing. And that's it for the PTR. So stay tuned on that. If you're on PC and want to get a chance, jump on in on the PTR, hop on in, send us an email what your thoughts are. Email us thepayload@blizzpro.com. Okay, now the big news. We did get a big news, not big nose. I was talking about myself for a moment. The big news is Jeff Kaplan, good King Jeff Kaplan, decided to grace us with his presence once more with a developer update. And in this one, we finally have a custom server browser. Hey! This is way too long of an applause sounder. We say it every time, so there it is. We do have a custom server browser. They revamped most of the options that you have. They added CTF into custom games. So already custom games are much more robust in what you can control and stuff like that. But now there's a custom game browser where you can search by region for certain types of custom games. Jamerson, I was talking about last week how important custom games were to me because I played Halo 2, and how you got good at headshots in Halo 2 was playing in a small little arena with 5, 6, 7, 8 total players, headshots only, battle rifles. And you just did that for hours and hours and hours a day. And that's how you got good. And right now there isn't really a way to have that much control. And then on top of that, try to find the people to be able to do those types of things in Overwatch. Mm. But this custom browser should resolve a lot of that. So now that we know all that, Jamerson, what do you think of the custom browser? Is it something that you might see yourself using more? Oh yeah, and custom games now grant experience, which is a big deal as well. Do you think you'll spend some more time in custom games?
Definitely. Just to experiment around with all the different settings. I mean, it's a lot of esports kind of found like its footing in the community, right? They found what like the best settings were. They played around with those. I mean, if you look at Counter-Strike, right? They found what like basically the optimal like round timers should be, proper ways to like do money bonuses for loss bonuses, everything like that. And that was discovered through countless hours of experimentation through the community. You know, I believe Kaplan said like a few weeks ago when he was talking about like how PTR changes work, it's sort of like a way for them to get even more people to like test the changes instead of just relying upon their own QA team. It is a huge, you can think of like these custom servers basically as just a giant PTR playing field, right? Things that the QA team just might not have experimented with because who knows, maybe someone wants to have like 100 or 1,000 percent increased speed rate on the game or something. I don't know, something ridiculous like that, right?
Yeah.
So these are things that like that will be experimented with because, well, that's human nature. And so it's only going to help the scene at this point.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I'm excited to spend more time with this. I need to kind of see it for myself. I'm still too, like, I haven't played enough on the different, like, I think between my three accounts, I'm really close to or above 100 significantly on all of them. So I'd put myself at like level 300, but across three different accounts, two different platforms. So it's totally different. I'm still at that point where I'm having a lot of fun and still learning so much just from the built-in matchmaking. But I remember that feeling in Halo and other games that I've played to just an ungodly amount of I'm ready for something new, something different, or I want to hone in. I'm ready to start specializing instead of just generally trying to improve my game. And so I'm really excited to check this out. This is pretty big news. If you haven't, look in the show notes. There's a link to the developer update with Jeff Kaplan. And it was pretty funny. You know, people always do stuff with Jeff Kaplan's voice for every time he does it. So one person did like, here's the developer update. But every time he takes a breath, he goes faster. And then another one was, here's Jeff Kaplan, but only the breaths that he takes from this developer update. I spent a little time and actually made one that every time he made a breath, it pitched shift him a half a note higher. And so by like two and a half, 3 minutes, he was like an octave and a half above. And it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
So, I posted it on my Twitter. I don't think I'm going to put it in the show notes, but it was a lot of fun to just kind of, it's a lot of fun to mess with those videos. They're becoming a cult classic. But okay, that's about it for the news this week. I don't think we missed anything. So we're going to jump into esports here and jump into the esports fast break right after the bumper.
Faster than sight. So predictable.
The
This is the Esports Fast Break for February 3rd through February 10th. This week on the Esports Fast Break, a group of promising up-and-coming teams compete at the Strivewire Monthly Brawl. We get our first look at the new Tempo Storm at the Haste Overwatch Finals. And Apex Season 2 keeps on rolling with two world team matches this week, including Misfits fighting to keep a spot in the playoffs. To start, let's go to the Haste Overwatch Finals, where new teams and familiar faces fight for their spot in the competitive Overwatch spotlight. This tournament included some major esports organizations like Tempo Storm, Counter Logic Gaming, Method, and Gale Force Esports, as well as some lesser known names like Hammers Esports, Envision Esports, Nameless, and Doot Doot. This tournament was an interesting one. Every single match was a sweep. In the grand finals, it was a match against the February monthly Melee winners, Hammers Esports, versus the near completely revamped Tempo Storm. Hammers Esports wins the tournament, sweeping Tempo Storm 3-0. Switching gears, Strivewire has begun to host their monthly Overwatch Brawl. While many of these teams are unknown, it did include some larger organizations like Team Dignitas and Gamers Origin, as well as the heart of the former Reunited roster in X Reunited. The results were largely what was to be expected, with the top four consisting of Dignitas, X Reunited, Gamers Origin, and X-Rox. In the grand finals, the X Reunited roster swept Gamers Origin 3-0. Lastly, we saw a handful of matches at Korean-based Overwatch Apex Season 2. In the hotly anticipated matchup between Luxury Watch Blue and Lunatic High, Scandal took most of the headlines. While LW Blue has been plagued by out-of-game distractions, Lunatic High were forced to compete without Litajun and Dean after news broke of inappropriate interactions with female fans. Despite the setback, Lunatic High upset Luxury Watch Blue 3-1 and now lead Group B. Konbok Spirit defeated Kongdu Uncia 3-0, Kongdu Panthera crushes Runaway 3-0, and Envious took a commanding win against BK Stars. In the battle between Misfits and Afrika Freaks Red, Misfits stay alive, defeating Afrika Freaks Red 3-0. Next week, we'll see Cloud9 take on Afrika Freaks Blue, Flashlux go against Fnatic, BK Stars against MVP Infinity, and Afrika Freaks Red versus Luxury Watch Blue. Games start at 2 a.m. Pacific Time on Tuesdays and Fridays at twitch.tv/OGNGlobal. That's it for this week's Esports Fast Break. All right, that's it. We're all caught up. Jamerson, that's everything that happened this last week. So now we don't have to spend 15 minutes talking about that, and we can talk about the big stories. And I wanted to ask, I'm actually really happy that we got you on the show this week, because there's a lot that has happened in esports in Overwatch. And it just feels like, I'm hoping we're at a little bit of a crescendo here and things slow down a little bit, because it's changing too much too quickly for me. So first and foremost, Hammers Esports. So Hammers Esports upset Luminosity at the monthly Melee earlier this month. I think like it was like the first or second day of the month. And that was kind of the first real high placement that they kind of had had. And then now they went ahead and they won again, this time defeating Tempo Storm here. Is Hammers Esports for real? Are they, should they be up there with like Misfits and, you know, some of those other teams? Are they that good right now? What do you think?
Well, there are a lot of issues that you have to actually consider when it comes to like these defeats. Yes, Hammers Esports, they just got picked up, I believe, like a few weeks ago or about a month ago, formerly Bird Noises. They were making, you know, a name for themselves in like the monthlies beforehand. But, you know, LG still dealing with getting their roster over here in North America. Tempo Storm.
They were gutted completely, right? There's two people who were on the roster now that they were there in November, which is the last time that they played at any sort of tournament.
Yeah, the strange thing about Tempo Storm is that they've actually been in a rebuilding period since what you mentioned. They were working with Seamoose. for about the last 2 months before he left for, I guess, creative differences, essentially. So there's still a roster that's not completely built the way that they had probably envisioned. So there's still a lot of things, you know, I mean, not to like discount Hammers Esports. They played fantastically, but there were, you know, mitigating issues to LG and to Tempo Storm in their performance at that point.
Sure. No, I think that's great. And I'm glad you brought that up, because it's that type of insight that even somebody who, I hit all the major tournaments, I nerd out on the over.gg in Winston's lab. And it's like, that's the kind of stuff though, where you need somebody who gets paid the big bucks to talk about these over Ibrahim, big bucks, who has a lot of fun talking about those things. So
there it is.
Really glad you brought that up. So Tempo Storm hitting second then, do you think that that's a good sign for Tempo Storm then? I mean, I don't think it can be bad, but these weren't necessarily the biggest and toughest names in Overwatch esports either.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with Tempo Storm was that, you know, they've been running tryouts for 2 months, and they've been rotating in people every other week. And so they haven't really found their complete chemistry yet. Once they do, once they establish that roster, make sure it's completely solidified, you know, then I believe they'll start turning some heads. Same thing with Luminosity at this point. Luminosity, once they're fully established, they're all in their gaming house and they're all playing together, like, things will look good for them too. Because, I mean, they performed really well during the winter premiere too.
Right. Now, it's true. Now, you're talking a lot, and a big thing, one of the big things that I hear you saying is that that team chemistry is really important when it comes to winning in Overwatch. And I don't think anybody could debate that realistically. It's a hugely synergistic game, and having teammates that know each other is only a good thing in this game. But we did see something with Apex Season 2 where we actually saw Lunatic High lose two of their players this week and still upset Luxury Watch Blue 3-1. So are they just playing at such a high different level than Tempo Storm and Hammers Esports to where they can do that? Was it a fluke? Is it a combination of both? Is it what do you think that is then? Why do you think that Lunatic High was able to take such a demanding victory against Luxury Watch Blue?
So there are actually a lot of things I could talk about here. I've been following the Korean scene since probably June or May of last year. So all of these players, I've come to know them really well. I've actually gone to meet most of them. I actually cast one of the more hype Lunatic High and Luxury Watch matches in their InVen Global Grand Championships when I was actually over in Korea, where LW were able to beat Lunatic High. I believe the scoreline was like 4-2. Lunatic High have always struggled against the Luxury Watch brand, in particular the Luxury Watch Red brand. But I think they finally like were able to get a read on how Flower played. I think they did a really good job of like shutting him down. Now, the other thing is that on the side of LW Blue, remember, it's like the combination, right, of the LW Red DPS and then the LW Blue, like everyone else.
Right, they're rebuilding LW Red right now, right?
Yeah. Lunatic High actually fared a lot better against LW Blue brand. You have to remember, Lunatic High always lost to LW Red. So I wouldn't call it an upset to say that they beat LW Blue. LW Blue, most of that roster, the majority of that roster actually struggle against Lunatic High, and generally Lunatic High would make them look pretty darn silly. So I'm so glad to actually see Lunatic High get this win, even though it's under these really odd like roster changes. But yeah, Lunatic High losing Itaejun and Dean, really unfortunate. There's still a lot of conflicting stories there, especially in regards to Itaejun, and I hope that we can bring him back because he is a stellar player. Dean, I thought maybe he was one of the weaknesses, actually, on the side of Lunatic High, along with, I might get some flack for this, Eska. But who,
From me, that's bold. I loved Eska on the May. Apex Season 1 is so much fun for me. So I don't know if we can speak anymore. But continue anyways. No, just kidding.
No, like, before Lunatic High can reach that top tier one and really compete against Envious, they need Eska to really step up his hitscan and try to be able to go toe-to-toe against people like Taimu and AKM. But unfortunately, he doesn't have that ability yet. And you can see that in his playstyle that he'll rather switch off to Reaper instead of trying to take the DPS battle one-on-one. But who are you getting put in as the new DPS? He has really shown with his Genji play. Generally, like a lot of teams, because of the prevalence of Genji in Korea, have learned how to play around that, right? We've seen Flower go off on him. We've seen Haksal go off on him. So a lot of teams have made the adjustments to try and figure that out. But for who are you to go in and play a Genji up against a really established team that should know how to deal with it and then absolutely crush? I think that was like a real statement coming out from Lunatic High.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you. I'm learning so much. Like, again, I was really excited to have you here because I follow the scene pretty closely, but I didn't spend any time in Korea to do this. So one more question. So we got X Reunited, which I believe was four of the six Reunited guys before Reunited had to close up shop. I believe it's four anyways, close enough. They went ahead and competed this week and they won and pretty handily as well. How long do you think until this roster gets picked up, or do you think that they're really not good enough yet to quite be in that league?
I mean, Bench Boys, it's like a complete, like, we're talking about Bench Boys, right?
I was talking about the X Reunited. So the team that was formerly, X Reunited.
Hold on. So we're talking about like Winghaven and, Bench Boys. So basically, well, I mean, it's.
It's different, right? So X Reunited is
so weird.
Morte, Valetija Unfixed, Cruz,
Sherrick.
Yeah. So those guys, basically, okay. I think what Morte, Unfixed, Cruz, and Sherrick were all part of the roster before. Three of them. I know for sure three of them will. Anyways, are they good?
Just because, like, you know, we have Bench Boys who also have like Tweezy, Kib, and Winghaven, like who played. Yeah. So basically everyone from Reunited going their own ways and like doing a really great job so far. I mean, that was an all-star roster. It honestly was. And it was really unfortunate that what happened to the organization happened at that point. And, you know, figured at that point, whatever team like these guys go to or whatever team these guys form, they're going to continue to go ahead and continue to perform as well as they did. I mean, Valetija just like made an absolute name for himself just being a star DPS player. So, yeah, I'm not surprised at all.
Cool. So let's go on then, because I think you and I both really want to discuss this a little bit, and that's Bench Boys. So Bench Boys is a new team formed by Tweezy, who was just on FaZe Clan a couple weeks ago, dropped for some differences in personality going a different direction, forms his own team. And the team includes Tweezy, of course, at a flex spot, Kaib at a flex spot, Crew at a flex spot, Winghaven as tank, and Hal and Gray as supports. Crew and Tweezy specifically have been dropped or removed or have stepped back or away from their teams multiple times for personality conflicts or other personal things going on. Kaib stepped down for assuming really no reason during the kind of Reunited time like that, at least from what we saw externally. I don't know if you have any more insight on that. And then just today, they signed Winghaven, who was on Reunited and Complexity, and now he's committed to the team as well. Is this a roster here? Do we have a real contender here to kind of compete with some of those bigger teams? For me, immediately, I'm putting them. I want to put the names up next to like maybe former Reunited or like Misfits or kind of there where they're very good, but we haven't seen anything from them for a while.
Definitely this roster looks fantastic, right? All it's another one of those like all-star rosters that people definitely can recognize the names. Haven't gotten to see much of them. We were able to see them yesterday, actually, during the 3v3 tournaments. They had split themselves up into two teams, and individually, you know, they still look stellar. Kib looks a little bit shaky on Genji, but I mean, it's also a 3v3, so it's a completely different format and completely different environment where you're trying to play Genji. But I mean, I'm super excited to have Kib back. When he was, you know, filling in a little bit during the winter premiere, didn't look as comfortable. You know, he was also playing with ping issues. But yeah, like these are all players I still want to see in the scene, regardless of like possible like in-game chemistry that they might have with the team or like with other players within the community. They're still stellar players, and I want to see them just continue, you know, like build up their like highlight reels, because these are all explosive, dynamic players. So having 2EZ, Kib, and like Crew, Winghaven, all on the same team. Now, Hal and Gray, I'm not as familiar with,
right?
But putting them in the support roles, hopefully, you know, one of them shines as an Ana, because most teams, you know, they need that star Ana now to really want to make it.
Right. Yeah. Something that for me, kind of when I was thinking about this and doing some notes earlier in the week, you know, for me individually, there's no doubt that this is a super competitive team. They're great individual players. I think for me, the big question is especially when you know that a few of them are known for not working the best within the team format, whether because the rest of the team was in the wrong or the organization wasn't prepared to support that type of player, or because the player was just kind of being a jerk. It's if this team can come together and overcome those things to play as a single unit. And for me, I feel like that's one of the big things. Take the names out of it, keep the skill for them to succeed. Do you think there's any other things maybe missing that they might need? Or is it just, or do you think that that's pretty spot on?
Right now, one of the, like, the most interesting things is that this is actually a, like a really diverse roster. Generally, you've been seeing a lot of these teams try to like build up one like national identity, right? You've got the Swedes, you've got the Spanish team, you got the French team. Sure. But this is one of those ragtag group of players, you know, coming from all corners of Europe to come together. So hopefully, like, you know, their team chemistry will work out. You know, luckily all of them speak English to a good extent. So the language barrier, not as much of an issue, but they might have difficulty, you know, trying to play as coordinated as all these other teams who are all just either speaking French or Spanish or German or what have you. So they do have like their uphill struggle. And of course, once again, to try to commit the time that is necessary to be on the top levels of Overwatch, you do need an organization. And at this point, they need one sooner rather than later, especially with the timeline of what's going on with the Overwatch League.
Sure. Cool. All right. So two more things I want to hit on here, and then we'll get out of here for the week. The former latter half of Kangarna, so half went to Ghost. The other half, Ajax, Connor J, and forget the third name. Anyways, they opted to not sign with Ghost at the end of the winter premiere. And those who have not chose to sign actually formed and merged with Splice. So we've got this new roster here. So Jamerson, what's going on with this? You're the one who kind of popped it my way. So I bet you have a better grasp on it overall than I do.
So the insight on that is that the inside news on that, basically the split was known before the end of Winter Premier amongst the team that was going to happen. They just wanted to, you know, finish off that tournament. Between Ghost and Splice was that apparently, I don't know if I can talk about this.
Don't risk it. Don't risk it.
Well, like I said earlier, Splice has a new investor, a lot of money coming in. Just basically came down to a bidding war for Michael, Baby Bay, and iRemix. So Ghost, even though they have a decent amount of money to like work with, it's just something that was not feasible for them at that point. I mean, they were, from what I know from Ghost, they were like full-fledged there. Yeah, we want to build this roster up. We're good. We've got the house. We want to move like the players in within a week. But, you know, players, they're thinking about their careers. Money's kind of important. So Splice was just able to like offer them a better deal at that point. And then the other half of Ghost of Kangarna, unfortunately, I guess people can glean what's going on with Blam and Connor J right now. Essentially, TSM is what's happening with Ajax announcing his departure from TSM, even though it wasn't announced yet. So that roster is getting built up right now on the side of TSM. I don't know with the departure of Ajax if they're going to be continuing on with Connor J and Blam.
You should go play with Bench Boys with the amount of teams he's getting benched on.
So that's still up in the air. I don't know exactly what's going on with TSM, but they really are focusing on building a brand within Overwatch, or building their brand within Overwatch. They're doing it very carefully, especially with, you know, how their initial reception was in the scene, trying to pick up Code 7 squad that fell through because of, I guess, scandal within the scene. So they're just full on trying to, you know, avoid any and all scandal and just build up the best team that they can.
Cool. That's interesting. I'm definitely going to keep a closer eye on that, because those are there's a few players right now who there's just little whispers about where they're going and what's going on. Other organizations, just whispers on the cusp of signing these teams. So, pretty exciting overall. Okay, last thing I wanted to get with you while we're here, Jamerson, is Over.gg announced or published their world rankings of their top 10 players in the world. And I wanted to discuss with you a little bit about who you thought was the best and who would be in your top 5 and go from there. So make sure to hop over to Over.gg, read the whole article. Because it's great. I love the stuff that they're doing at Over.gg. So first, Envious, number 1 in the world. Is there any way to contest that Envious is the best team in the world right now, Jamerson? Or do you just have to put Envious in number 1?
Envious is number 1, hands down. There's no contesting that whatsoever. They've finally gotten over like their LAN issues, right? They were just cursed, right? At LAN, they just weren't able to take first, but online, they were just absolutely stomping everyone. But now it's just absolute stomps left and right here in OG and Apex season 2 and season 1. And they're just looking better and better every time we see them. They, you know, talk about like the small mistakes that they make, and they're very highly critical of themselves as players and themselves as a team, which is, I think, the absolute proper mindset they're walking into, you know, trying to stay on top. They're not resting on their laurels, and they're continually trying to improve. And the more they work with their latest addition, Mickey, the better and better they look. Even though Mickey wasn't able to like play the diva that we had seen all throughout OG and Apex season 1, he was still performing really well for his team. So I'm glad that like we were able to see him make that adjustment. Overall, there isn't a player on Envious that just isn't absolute star talent and like probably one of the highest tier of like whatever role they're playing.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. So Envious is number one. I'm glad we can agree about something here, and I'm not just totally give me the freebie. It's like the teacher who in high school or middle school would like give you a point for putting your name or what you learned this week, the total arbitrary point. That's Envious at number one. Number two and number three, over.gg has LW Blue and Lunatic High. Now, after Lunatic High upset Luxury Watch Blue, do you still put them at two and three there respectively? Do you flip those? Do you have somebody else at two and three?
At two, I would actually not put LW Blue there. I mean, Josh did a slideshow, did a really great job on these rankings. But from what I've seen in my own personal beliefs, I feel Kangdu Unsia would be better served as number two. But I mean, you know, this isn't all done in a vacuum. Once again, these are in the group stages right now. And so there's still a lot of like moving room currently. Right. I think Lunatic High probably at the right place there around three. I don't think they are the best team in Korea, but they have the talent, and they have like what am I looking up? What word am I looking for here? Yeah, the talent is there, and so is the potential for Lunatic High to
got it.
Get better.
Great. Potential, yeah. Like it.
Yeah. Cool. But I mean, it's really difficult to call Korea at this point because, like I said, it's all in group stages. We're not getting to see the matchups that we want to see until later on in the season. And even then, like what we saw in Apex Season 1, there were upsets like left and right. Teams coming out of nowhere to make sure that they secured their spot in like the semifinals and everything. So like Korea is just really contentious at this point. Sure. I don't think the only gripe I have with like this ranking of the top 10, and it's not Josh's fault at all. It's just the way current Overwatch competitive has worked out with like the top NA and EU teams in Korea competing against the Koreans. We don't get to see actually the other like, I guess, tier two or really good NA and EU teams compete in that exact same kind of litmus test there. So it's very difficult for Josh to like make this ranking because, as you notice, there's a lot of Korean teams on the top 10 there.
Right. And probably in many cases, rightfully so. They're still very proficient in Overwatch. Do you think that Cloud9, with their recent addition of Gods and how they've been playing at Apex Season 2, albeit not much, do you think that they deserve a spot here in the top 10?
I think Cloud9 over Meta Athena. I don't think Meta Athena should be in the top 10 here.
They're
a roster that still has a lot to prove. I believe they made their way through the Challengers series, right? Of Apex to qualify into Apex Season 2. So there's still a lot to learn about that roster. I don't think they are quite tested properly. So Meta Athena is probably the standout there. And then possibly even AF Blue. They are not looking the same anymore. And I think AF Blue might have fallen out of like the tier one of Korea.
Sure. Okay, now you got me curious here. So I'm just going to start asking you questions. And you did not get to prepare for these at all. So Immortals. We've got Immortals at number 10 here. Immortals just recently won the winter premiere. Quite handily as well, mind you. They did very well at the winter premiere. Number 10, still the highest that they get, or do you think that they get to jump up a few spots as well?
10 is looking pretty good. They are definitely one of the best teams in North America right now. And the thing is, you know, they've been a relatively stable roster for a really long time now. I mean, when was the last time Verbo came in during winter premiere, and that was like the last switch up they had. Moving Chance off into coach. into the coaching position.
Then back but, into and tank.
Winter Premier.
And back into,
yeah, back yeah. into tank because unfortunately there were visa issues yeah, for Nomi.
Yeah.
And a lot of people touted like Nomi as like probably one of the best performances during Winter Premier leading up to the semifinals. And so yeah. to be like playing with, I guess, that handicap was a bit difficult for them, but they still persevered and they got looked that 3-1 yeah. victory, 3-1 over Ghost there. Like I called it. I don't want to like sound a little cocky here, but like I called it.
Be cocky. That's the way we have you here, to be cocky and be right. So
when we were flying in to work on that, when we were flying to PAX South, I was just like, yeah, if this goes to Ghost and Immortals, it's going to be 3-1. Like Immortals take this. Like it's just, that's what's going to happen. And that's what they did. And they look stellar, right? Right? Grim Reality really got to show off what he can do once he gets his hands on McCree. Agility's getting crazy plays off when he got onto his McCree. Or not, excuse me, when he got onto his Genji. We even got to see, like, Hyped had some really great plays. And, you know, Chance, for not having, like, really, like, played with the team because of the entirety of January being Winter Premier qualifiers or, yeah, the group stages, and it was Nomi playing, for Chance to, like, step in and, like, be able to maintain his composure and be that foundation of the team, you know, as the coach, as the Reinhardt, he did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
I think they're in a really good spot once like Grim Reality and I believe Agility's also, they're both 17. Once they can actually, you know, not have to put in the daily 8-3 high school grind and then just focus straight on Overwatch, they are going to be absolute monsters.
When can these kids get out of school and start playing video games? I like it.
Right?
What an amazing time to be alive. That's good. And I'm really glad here. So I think you brought up some amazing, amazing thoughts about this list. And I'm really excited. I wrote most of them down so I can review it for later. But
time is money, friends. And we're almost flat broke.
We got to get out of here. It's been a heck of a show. It's been a long show, especially for just two guys talking about Overwatch. It's been a while, but it was a lot of fun, man. So first, Jamerson, thank you so much for being here, especially on such a short notice. I gave you, what, about an hour and a half? So
yeah, it was fine. I went to the gym. I came back and I was like, yeah, let's do this.
Awesome. So. Well, it's always a pleasure having you. You've always got a seat on the payload. But let's go ahead and get out of here. First and foremost, if you have comments, questions you'd like on the show or off the show, please, if you don't want it on the show, just say it in the email. Send us an email to thepayload@blizzpro.com. And I do a pretty good job at responding. I'm back into it. I think I missed a few over the last couple of weeks. So do that first and foremost. Second, Patreon. Our show is 100% financially supported by our fans. So if you like the show, want to support the show, and want to get in on some of the game nights that we're doing with Patreon, we're hanging out in discord.gg/blizzpro talking about Overwatch throughout the week. Head on over to patreon.com/payloadpodcast. And a special thank you to our MVPs, Adam A, J.A., Corel, and Tommy H. Thank you so much. We're really close to our merch store, so we can get a payload t-shirt and then send them to all of our guests who are casting everywhere else and pay them to wear it. I'm just kidding. We're really close to that. No new iTunes reviews, but one of the easiest, simplest, and least expensive ways to support the show besides listening is to leave a 5-star iTunes review. Head on over to iTunes, type in Overwatch. We're usually sitting in the 3rd through 5th slot right there. Hit the payload, hit leave a review, leave 5-star, leave a comment, and we'll read your name on the show. So go ahead and do that. That's it, though. Let's go ahead. Jamerson, where can people find you throughout the week? Any shout-outs that you might have? All that good stuff.
Yeah, so if you guys want to stay on top of everything esports going on with Overwatch, doing a lot of work, just follow me right there. I believe it's... right there on the bottom right at Jet Set Jamerson all across the board. So on here on Twitch, on Twitter, Snapchat if you want to, and hell, even Instagram, even though I don't use it on Thursday nights. For the next 2 months, I will be on twitch.tv/esportsarena. That's going to be our 3v3 and 1v1 tournament. So go ahead and sign up for that. It's agents.gg is where you go to register for that. And then, of course, next week, collegiate esports is also a thing, guys. And so I'll be hosting that. It's going to be the TESPA Collegiate Finals taking place next Sunday. So if you want to watch that on Sunday, it's going to be twitch.tv/teamTESPA.
Awesome. I didn't tell you this, and I probably shouldn't say this on the show, but I'm looking at moving out to California in May, June.
Hey,
so
we can make some moves, man.
We can hang out. It'll be awesome.
Yeah.
As for me, I am streaming at twitch.tv/kicktripod, on Twitter at twitter.com/kicktripod, at kicktripod.com. And that's where you got a link. I do my own YouTube stuff. So like the esports fast breaks are there and other things that I'm doing throughout the week. So head on over there as well. Well Met, of course, is the other podcast that I do. Wellmet.blizzpro.com. If you like Hearthstone, want to hang out and chat about that. Woo! Jamerson, I think we did it. I think we're out of here. Thank you so much again for being here, man. It's always a blast to have you.
Thank you for having me. I definitely enjoyed my time tonight.
Awesome. Awesome. It's because you don't have Jimmy and Rosh interrupting us. We can just be alone all by ourselves. I'm just kidding. They never do.
I miss Jimmy and Rosh.
I do too. Can't wait to see you guys next week. Jimmy and Rosh, this one's for you. Let's go ahead, though. Let's get out of here then. We're out of time, so we'll do it. So thank you for tuning in to episode 56 of The Payload. You can find more great Overwatch stuff throughout the week at overwatch.blizzpro.com. The show records live every Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific at twitch.tv/blizzpro, and we are on Twitter at Payload Podcast. The Payload is primarily supported by you, our fans. Join the Payload family and find out how we can support you at patreon.com/payloadpodcast. And we love your emails. Send us your questions and comments to thepayload@blizzpro.com. And your 5-star reviews, too. Send those there to iTunes, and we will mispronounce your name on the next show. And, of course, a special thank you to Jake Butineau for our awesome music. This has been episode number 56 of The Payload. We'll see you all next week. Bye, everybody. Bye.